This episode of Boat Briefing is sponsored by Amico & Co. Based in Genoa, at the heart of the Mediterranean, Amico & Co. is a family-owned refit yard with more than two centuries of maritime heritage behind it. Today, the yard is widely recognised for its work on large yachts, offering a full-service refit capability delivered largely through its own in-house teams, from paint and engineering to complex conversions and structural projects. Rooted in one of Europe's great historic port cities, Amico combines tradition, technical depth, and long-term thinking, making it a trusted partner for owners, captains, and shipyards alike. Hello, and welcome to Boat Briefing, the podcast exploring all the latest superyacht news and stories across the industry. I'm Holly Majerison, the head of digital content here at Boat International, and today we're taking a closer look at the Boat Artistry and Craft Awards, which are held in association with Parkway England. Having just passed their third year, the awards were created to shine a spotlight on the artisans, makers, and craftspeople whose work helps bring the world's most exceptional yacht interiors to life. From bespoke furniture and marquetry to innovative materials and one-off artistic commissions, the awards celebrate the skill, creativity, and dedication that often goes unseen behind the finished yacht. So the winners of the 2026 awards were announced earlier this year at the Superyacht Design Festival. And right now, it felt like the perfect moment to go behind the scenes of the programme, the judging process, and this year's winning entries, as well as speaking to one of last year's winners, Poppy Pawsey, to hear what the awards mean to her 1 year on. But first, I'm joined by Jay Rushton, CEO of Parkway England and one of the awards judges, to discuss why recognising craftsmanship matters and what stood out from this year's entries. Okay, so Jay, great to have you on. Thanks for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And I guess for anyone listening who may not know what Parkway England is, could you tell us a little bit more about what you do and the kind of work that you specialise in?
Yeah, so I'm the owner and CEO of Parkway England, and predominantly we're a bespoke furniture manufacturer. And much to the pain of my marketing team, we've been thrashing around the narrative of how we should promote ourselves and what that really looks like, because it's a big machine and you're trying to squeeze it into a very, I hate the cliche, elevator pitch, but we're a British bespoke furniture manufacturer. I think what's come around with our involvement as we move along is we're sort of promoting ourselves out there and have gained a reputation. This is our 20th year in business, which is, you know, by no means a small task, but we've sort of specialised in super yacht furniture for the duration of that. And along the way, certainly in the last 4 years, we've incorporated quite a heavy side working in the high-end residential markets as well. So the group's grown bigger now. So it's gone from being Parkway England, which is how we set our stall out in the marketplace, to the Parkway Group, which now has three core businesses within that division. And this is where the business now grows legs, and so does the tagline, and so does the narrative of what we actually do. But ultimately, that's what we are. Bespoke furniture manufacturers. We're very fortunate that we're in this incredible super yacht world, and there's a bigger part of what Parkway are involved with. Hence, we wanted to get involved with the judging panel.
Yeah, and obviously Parkway England has been such a key supporter of the Boat Artistry and Craft Awards. So why did you decide to get involved?
The key reasons really stemmed from probably about 4 years ago when we started having conversations with Boat International about our involvement within probably gaining a wider audience in the market sector. And this goes back to my point of, you know, this is 20 years that Parkway have been out there making furniture, but we've spent probably 15 to 16 years of that behind the scenes with no marketing, no sales, but working with the legends that we call them that are out there in the industry, like Terence Dysdale and Andrew Winch and these incredible designers on some of the biggest projects, but we have no recognition. And as much as we cherish these relationships that we have with these designers, You know, there comes a point when we looked at the business and said, okay, how are we going to grow? You know, you sit down from a sales and a marketing perspective and say, okay, so we need to approach the market. We need to gain a bigger overview of people knowing who we are and what we do. So even though we've spent 15 to 16 years, you're almost starting from fresh. And then it suddenly opens up a can of worms, because then as you grow as a business, you're looking for more artisans and craftspeople who, you know, the UK just isn't really geared up for promoting that to the industry. So, you know, one of the struggles that me and my management team had were saying, we just can't find people. We can't find people, A, on the, you know, we have an apprentice program. We were saying we just can't entice younger generations to begin to join us. If there's anybody already out there skilled, they're already bedded in with the company and probably enjoying what they're doing. It's a bit of a dying trade. So we found ourselves hitting that wall. But then also as a company, we do pride ourselves in being probably up there with the best, top five in the world, I would say, as bespoke furniture makers in the high end of the super yacht marketplace and the high end residential side. And, you know, we don't make any qualms about it. We were working with other manufacturers producing and finishing their furniture for them. So we're well versed in the marketplace. We know who's out there. We know the makers. We know there's some incredible talent around. But we didn't want to go out there into the marketplace as just a, you know, placing adverts in magazines. And that's not the way the world works as a bespoke furniture maker, and certainly not as a white label furniture maker, because ultimately the tricky balance is you want people to know that you're there to come to you to ask you to make furniture, but you can't promote yourself because we're almost behind the scenes in the industry and we sign NDAs, we can't disclose our projects. So it's such a tricky balance, and that's how we came to have a really good conversation with the team at Boat and said, what can we do? You know, we don't just want adverts in magazines. We want to do something more unique and unusual. And that's where they came up with the idea of the backer judging panel. I said, I'd love to do that. You know, it resonates so highly with where we were. You know, I've got this insane passion, which, you know, both my wife and friends around me don't understand why I do the hours and the traveling and everything that goes into it. But if you're wired that way with that passion, it really shows. And I think, you know, one of my comments that I made when I was looking through the notes on this podcast was, you know, the judging panel, we're an unusual and a dynamic bunch of individuals, all from different backgrounds, all from different sectors. But as a collective, we've all got the same driven passion deep rooted in our DNA. And it comes together when we're judging. You know, we all recognize incredible quality or unique artisans. And that could be somebody that's making a piece of furniture. It could be somebody that's making cutlery. It could be people that are creating, you know, woven lampshades from, you know, the seabed. It's incredible. And these are the things that really excite us, because, you know, we're living and breathing what we all do in our own sectors. But there's so much out there that none of us are aware of. So if we're not aware of it, how do you get that out then to the front line, who's either the design team or indeed the owner? So a lot of this sort of behind the scenes talent that is right at the very beginning of the journey, nobody ever sees or recognises. So that's really why the judging for me, you know, I got a small insight with Boat to say, this is what it's about. And it's, you know, we're only a couple of years in. And I leapt at the chance. A, you know, I've made some great friends within the judging panel. Some of us, we already work together. It's just it's something nice to be involved with that also puts back out there and helps develop it. You know, selfishly, that there's an investment there from myself, which means we get some publicity and we get a wider audience understanding about Parkway. But it really is about the artisans and the craftsmanship. So, yeah, it ticks so many boxes.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, as you just said, it's such a challenge in this industry, I think, to get those artisans and the behind-the-scenes makers into the spotlight. And obviously, Parkway being Parkway, it's just you understand that same struggle, I think, that in this industry there are so many NDAs and so much privacy. And whilst we do a great job of celebrating the full finished beautiful yacht, and you know, the exterior, the interior, the naval architecture, which all need to be celebrated as well. I think it's just, I mean, I love these awards because it drills into the detail. And, you know, yeah. when you then go on these yachts at Cannes or Monaco Yacht Show, and you know, you're looking at the tables and the marquetry that's involved, it brings it to life when you know the backstory behind all these projects. So.
Absolutely. And I think that's where, you know, we talk about so many sides of this industry. And it's incredible seeing the polished, finished article and these owners who, you know, you can look at this from both sides of the story. You can look at it and say these owners have these incredible projects that are completed. But equally, if it wasn't for those owners with that investment, giving us the opportunity to then grow and develop our businesses and our market sectors, we'd never be able to do what we do. So it goes hand in hand. And I think that's where it would be amazing to be able to get the owners to open up more. But we also fully understand, you know, their privacy and their requirements. So it's a constant, I wouldn't call it a battle. It's just a balancing act of how much you can show. But it's a frustration because there's so much that goes on behind the scenes, you know, and I'm a small part of that jigsaw. You know, we've got 70 staff and they're all, you know, they all are intrigued. Some of my team get out, you know, we can be in installations around the world and they do get to see the bigger picture. But, you know, if I peel that right back and look at my marquetry team or my cabinet makers or the upholsterers, they don't get to see what goes on out there in the world. They're contained within, you know, a very nice factory maybe, but nevertheless, they don't get out to see these projects. And it's only when you're up close to them that you gain a real true sense of, A, some of the scale of these, certainly on the super yachts, but also on the residential projects. You know, there's incredible projects that we've been involved with around the world. That's what really is the icing on the cake when you see it. It's just a shame that we can't put out more. So I think the judging, the backer, is what enables us to bridge that somewhere in between, because I think it's definitely gaining, even in the few years I've been doing it. I think the first round that we had, it was as interesting for me as it was for everybody else. Year two, you then end up with a bigger understanding of what that can do and the doors it can open for, you know, the awareness into our industry. It's been great because now, you know, you become an ambassador of the backer and you're putting that out there into just even in passing conversations when we're at trade shows or we're meeting clients. And it enables us to sort of look into other things that are going on. And I think certainly the backer is great because it enables me as a business owner to try and promote the recruitment and apprentices and discuss with colleges and even with other, you know, competing makers in the UK. I think that, you know, it's ridiculous that we all set our boundaries from each other, but, you know, there's a big enough cake out there that we can all share. And I think we have to come together now as a collective to try and bring in new generations of skills and experience and people that want to get involved in what we do, because it isn't out there. Mm. So I think the, you know, the Artistry and Craft Awards are a combination of many things. They just enable us to be able to open doors to grow and develop our industry. Otherwise, you know, we're doing all this work and we have to have an understanding that it's for the generations to come.
Yeah.
And if we can put the groundwork in now and help promote what we do, it is going to provide a benefit for new generations. Because as much as there's people that are making things by hand and the tech world is evolving, you know, I think this year at Kitzbühel we saw that for sure, you know, some incredible stats that are being delivered. And we can't be fooled to think that tech isn't going to sneak into even the making side, because it is. You know, we're already integrating AI and tech into our business model to improve and make more efficiency. But you still need that craft and skill driven by humans. We have to do what we can to help promote that.
Definitely. I mean, you've touched on a range of interesting points there, but I think what you were just talking about there about people, you know, we're in quite a strange world where, yes, we're advancing with tech and AI and everything, and there's many great uses, and I'm all for it. But at the same time, I think it's quite an interesting shift, because as everyone's kind of going more digital, people are also, it's kind of having this adverse effect where people are wanting a bit more analog. And I think, you know, people are appreciating craft and, you know, I don't know whether this is the right phrasing, but, you know, about those dying trades, I think they're going to become more niche and more appreciated perhaps over time, because people want something that's a bit more tactile, that they can engage with, that they can appreciate the quality and the craft that's in there.
That's right. Yeah, we're the same. I think when we look across at our business, and you know, we see a lot of similarities within other businesses, but you know, there's a lot of companies now that are sadly, you know, probably reaching their phase of their life term, I would say, because either owners are retiring or there's no longer a passover of some of those businesses. You know, there's some incredible businesses that have probably grown up over the years with people like Terry and Andrew at Winch, and you know, that they've had these supply chains in under their belt for decades and decades. But you know, that not only the design studios now having a new generation of designers that are now taking the lead, it's the same with makers. You know, the makers all around the world, you know, a lot of companies are retiring and you need somebody to take them over. At the same time, you've then got it's a great opportunity to integrate, you know, modern technology, and you know, the world that we're changing in has to come into phase. And we did the same. We've been discussing AI for probably the last year and a half of how do we incorporate that into a company that makes furniture. But it's crazy, because if you don't, it's in the same way that, you know, go back generations and you talk about fax machines and websites and stuff. And this is one of those phases again where we have to integrate it into our business models. So, you know, we're doing it with our estimating, or we'll be doing it with our processes and systems, and you know, so it can integrate into your business, and I think you're foolish if you don't look to bring it in. So it's interesting, even in areas that we're not involved with. You know, we were looking at nuclear energy at the beginning of the year at Kitzbühel, and there's elements you can take from all these parts of our sector. So I think even though the Backer Awards for us is about artisan and craftsmanship, it's interesting just to see what's going on within our industry and other sectors, to see how it integrates and the impact it has on us as a maker. So you're quite right, you know, in your earlier point. I think this is an area where some of these skills can only be passed down from generations. It's a heritage skill, and you don't want to lose those skills from generations gone by. And that's why, you know, the apprentices and bringing new young blood into the businesses is so important to get that handed down before, you know, before these people retire and no longer have the window to pass those skills on. So, you know, I think timing wise, it's quite interesting that it's come around when it has, because I think there's a huge push. You know, I know Deborah at Quest, who's involved on the judging panel, is already heavily involved in pushing that around into the industry. So it's super interesting. I think this round of awards that we were judging on the last year was even more unusual, because there were materials and products that were in there for awards that you wouldn't necessarily associate with what I thought we were going to be looking at. But nevertheless, you know, these are artisans, they're skills that cross over and have to be recognised.
Definitely. And maybe if we move to this year's awards a bit, and you know, I'm interested for designers or shipyards listening, and you know, we're trying to encourage them to open their little black books of artisans as well. What actually makes a standout submission for these awards to you as a judge?
I think certainly in the last round for us, we felt as though there's definitely a lack of contributing submissions, I would say. And what we found is there was a lot that was of a similar sector. So the variation is lacking. And I think that probably comes from a bit of the awareness. You know, we've struggled to get people to provide content for us to look at. That was definitely a challenge for the team and the boat team. So there's definitely a need to have more content submitted. But I think that was our understanding is that's a tricky point, because, you have to get not only owners, but you have to get the designers and then all the relevant parties. So there's not just one person that can, hey, say, hey, we'd love to submit this. You can, but then that's got to be approved by sometimes the design team, who've then got to go to the owner because they're under NDAs. It's still very much a shackled approach to getting the information. So that's one of the battles that we have. And it's a shame because there's so much out there that could be submitted. So I think even now we're only seeing probably a few percent of what is really available to us that we would love to have to look at, which is a shame because there's some absolutely incredible stuff that's made by people that have got skills that is so unique. It's like, you know, that's only going to ever be made once in this, on this world. So, you know, how do we get more of that? And that's the reality of where we are. You know, we're getting things put forward that have never been made before. There's materials that we're sort of seeing that have never been put forward into products before. That really is the interesting one. And I think this year we had some incredible materials and also the processes that go in using those materials. And that's where, like we were talking about before, where you then see the finished article, whether it's on a super yacht or it's in a beautiful, incredible home somewhere in the world, it's understanding what has gone into that to get it to what you can see in its polished, finished article. And we're desperately trying to get that broken down so that both owners and designers will allow us to be able to submit more information or ask them to submit information. And it's really difficult because, as you say, we all sign NDAs, us included. So you have to get the buy-in from the collective enabling us to at least have a look at something. And I think that's where we're still struggling. We talked about this last year. I know myself, Lay Coon and Andrew were talking about this the year before, saying, why can't we get more information? And we were saying to Andrew, it's because owners and designers either don't submit it or can't submit it or don't wish to submit it. You know, there's a collective, and even they were a little bit puzzled because we all have some incredible stuff. We see it on a weekly basis going through our factory, and we're a small part of the jigsaw puzzle. So I do think we'd love to see more submissions. I think the more the merrier, you know. If anything, it just opens these various categories that we had to be really embraced. And I think we're still missing being able to give the acknowledgement to those artisans or craftspeople. And that's a shame because, you know, that recognition, giving somebody that recognition, and I recognize that from my own makers that make things. And when you know, we congratulate them or we show them what our clients have said, or we show it on a project that we're unable to show them, you know, the sense of pride that they have is incredible. And it just helps push them further for their own internal development to want to do more. So it has a knock-on effect. It has a huge knock-on effect that I don't think a lot of people understand. And that's why the backer is super important.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. And actually, Eva Meckler is a great example of an artisan that she won a commendation last year in 2025. And this year she won Excellence in Craftsmanship this year. So it's a great full story moment, you know, where she's evolved and grown in confidence perhaps since then.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does. It has a huge impact on these people that are involved. And I think that's where, you know, it's an unusual one with the yards, because I think the yards probably have scope. You listen, the yards are an enormous power in the industry, and quite rightly, you know, subject to how the yards are, what type of projects the yards are working on, whether that's a new build or a refit, you know, there's certain go-to suppliers, I would say, that are in the industry that probably are well-established and have been there for a while. It's changing that up. It's, you know, it's opening the doors to new suppliers for the yards to approach. But some of that is built on trust. Some of that is built on, you know, testing. And unfortunately, we're probably in a world where these projects are so sensitively timed and priced that sometimes the yards won't wish to test new supply chains or have a robust supply chain already in place. And this goes back to it's an effort that has to be contributed by everybody. Everybody has to make their own effort in order for it to work. Otherwise, you know, we do the same. We're investing heavily into apprentices and new artisans and skills. And I know that goes on all around the world with makers that I'm aware of. But if we're not given the opportunity to get out there and get involved in these projects, then ultimately you end up with these artisans and other people, you know, only getting a small part of the market share and unable to promote themselves. And it's the usual suspects that continuously are out there in the marketplace. So there's a lot of other things that I think contribute to the development of new artisans or artisans that are well established, because there are some incredible people that I'm aware that are out there and they've never had any visibility for various reasons. NDAs, they're unable to tell people about what they do or who they work with. So it's a difficult one. There's a lot of politics tied within us promoting ourselves, which we understand because of the nature of what we do. But nevertheless, it's a frustration. We've just got to find a vehicle and a channel that enables us to promote ourselves, because we see it ourselves. You know, we invite clients down to our workshops, some clients that we've worked with for years, several years. And, you know, these are conversations and projects that we work with through face-to-face meetings, emails, video calls. The day that we can get them into the workshops and they can have a look around and they meet the makers and they touch materials and they see the finishes and upholstery and cabinets and the weirdest things that might be going through the factory that week, they have a whole different perspective and a change. So getting people to recognise what you do is so important. And that's really, for me, the backer is about this constant pushing. And ideally, I'd like to see that grow to an even bigger vehicle that helps us to promote it. Because without this part of the industry, you know, it's great having the yards and the fit out companies, but you've got to have these bespoke artisans that produce the unusual parts that we all do, because without that, it just becomes a commercial pick a product and pick your colour and away you go. But that's not what these owners want, something that nobody has, you know, whether that's their home or super yacht. So I think if you want something that is that unique, you have to continue to develop and invest and support the artisans.
Absolutely. And I think this is what these awards are so great for. You know, it's a platform. And, you know, my wrap-up question for this podcast was going to be, what would you like to see more of in future entries? But I think you've already answered it. It's, you know, getting more of these submissions, getting more. I suppose it's all about the collaboration, as you're saying, between studios and shipyards and owners, just to ensure everybody is coming together and celebrating the artisans and the behind the scenes makers that we unfortunately just don't hear enough about.
It is. And I think, you know, listen, Boat have opened this incredible channel that is only going to grow. And I think, you know, I'm really looking forward to this year's submissions, and I hope that we break the doors down in order for more content to be submitted. I think if we can get more content involved, I'd like to say this year we should see more projects and a wider scope. Probably the frustration is, you know, I know that the artisans, this is a small part, even though the super yacht world is incredible and it's this elite, unique world that we all are fortunate to work in. There's other areas, you know, the residential side of it, and even hospitality. You know, we're seeing more and more, even our own projects now, that there's the sort of wider scope is sort of expanding into those market sectors. So I think if we can also, I think somewhere down the line, there has to be the same sort of channel pushed out into those areas where we continue this artistry and craft awards into other market sectors, because I think the super yacht is probably the elitist of where we can promote this. And it is, you know, there's some incredible budgets out there from these projects, which do enable us all and the artisans that are out there to create and develop things that are of a uniqueness, which you then couldn't possibly do in some of the other sectors because they're budget restricted or time restraints. So I think this is probably the elite side of what we all do, but that's not to say that we wouldn't like to see it grow into and be promoted into other sectors as well.
Absolutely. Well, I hope that that's the case and that this is just the start of it, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
With people like you backing these awards, it's only going to grow, which is great.
That's very kind of you.
Well, Jay, thank you so much for your time. I'm speaking to Poppy next, who was last year's Emerging Artisan of the Year. So it'll be interesting to hear from her what's been happening 1 year on and what these awards have given her, you know, as a platform.
Absolutely. She's an incredible artisan, and to see what she produced was amazing, you know, such a skill. She's definitely one person that I really would like to see grow. I think she's got some incredible talent. So, yeah, I wish her all the best. And I do keep an eye on her development. She's a very skilled lady. So, yeah, I wish her all the best.
Absolutely. Well, Jay, thanks very much for your time.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me.
That was Jay Rushton, CEO of Parkway England and one of the judges for the Boat Artistry and Craft Awards. As we just heard, the awards are about supporting the people behind the work and helping to raise the profile of talented artisans at every stage of their careers. One person who knows that better than most is Poppy Pawsey, who was named Emerging Artisan of the Year in 2025. When I interviewed Poppy last year, we spoke about her remarkable journey from the Royal Marines to the world of marquetry, and how one of her very first major projects in the superyacht industry earned recognition from the judges. 1 year on, I wanted to catch up with her to find out what has happened since, what the award meant to her career, and what she's working on now. Here's our conversation. So quite quickly into your time at Silver Lining, you were working on a major project. Did you feel ready at the time, or were you just, you know, thrown straight into it and thought, I've got to do this?
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely wasn't very long into being there. So when I first joined, I did a couple of sort of test pieces, really, because you have to learn all of the programming as well. And I was terrible at computer work. So there was all that side of it as well. But was I ready? Oh, I don't know. But I definitely... I'm not one to shy away from a challenge. So when I got given the games table that I won the award with, I think I'd probably, yeah, it was one of my first solo projects, if not the first. And I love board games, and I absolutely adore backgammon. I sound like such a geek. In fact, everyone that knows me will say I'm such a geek. But there's kind of like a link. Yeah, I used to play with my godparents, that, you know, backgammon on their boat. And so when I heard I was going to be making one, I just thought, oh, that's so exciting. And it was also new and different for me as well. You know, I'm sure everyone thinks, oh, it was only a board game, but it was just so cool. It just felt so...
pictures of it, and when you see it in person, I think, it's more than just...
Yeah.
More than just a games board, for sure.
And so when, obviously, I get sent... How it works is you'll see a visual, and then I get sent the programming, and then I have to break out all of the pieces. And when you look at the finished games board and the pictures, the backgammon has got four butterflies on it, and they sort of interwoven into the backgammon darts. So it was all about layering and working out which layer came first, because I used sort of I think it was like five or six different veneers throughout it, and some were stained because, you know, the client comes to us and we have to sort of color match things, and it's all so bespoke. So there were so many different elements before you even start to make it. There was so much, you know, pre-work. But yeah, essentially I had to sort of do one layer, put it back onto the laser, cut through it, do another layer into that layer, and then sort of secure it with, and then get it back on the laser and cut through it. So there were sort of seven or so layers where I would hold my breath every time I hit the go button on the laser and think, oh my gosh, I really hope I programmed that right, or I hope I've got that line on the outside, not on the inside, and, you know, all these kind of things that you worry about. And that was also new to me. I love making a little sort of pre-run samples, so I know all the processes I'm going to do. That is something that I have stuck to.
That's your quality control.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you talked about the butterflies and the seven layers to it, but what was the most technically challenging part to you that you can remember?
Well, I think just the pieces were so tiny. So if you can imagine the point of a scalpel, some of the pieces would literally only just, you could only just see on the point of a scalpel because they'd broken down all the butterflies' wings. And then there was these tiny little dots. And some of them were just like, ping, off they'd go. Or you'd have to hold your breath so that you didn't breathe out and then everything would just shoot off over the table. But before all of that, I had to make a starburst lay-on, which in itself is, you know, a challenge, especially for someone who'd never done it before. So I think that was my first starburst ever done. And it was on like pure, almost white veneer that I'd stained this really like light taupe colour. So you don't want to get it dirty either. So I'd sort of put all that starburst together. Then I had to put that onto the laser, cut in ginkgo leaves into that round. Then, you know, assemble all that and then do the games board separately. So there was lots of elements. There was like the tabletop and then there was the backgammon board and the chess board. But it was, I just loved working on it so much. And I just wish I could play backgammon on that board.
Yeah, I bet. It's one of those kind of cool things where you, if you're quite a fan of the game as well and it's got a personal story to you, then I imagine it's a bit soul-destroying when you then have to give it over and you don't get to actually use it.
Yeah. Can I come on your boat and play backgammon, please?
And what about, you know, what are people often surprised by when they hear about the process? Do you think that people quite often can overlook the skill and the craft that goes into every tiny piece? And do you feel like you have to explain that to people?
I don't really think people, I mean, when I say I'm a marketarian, people think I work in marketing to start with.
It's a misunderstood term.
No one's really ever heard of it. And then I think the only way I can describe it is by showing photos of what we do. Obviously, there's quite a lot that we can't show, but things we can show. Everyone's like, wow, that's crazy. But even I think I forget sometimes it's all of the background work that takes so long and is so important for the final, like really putting it all together is the final bit. Mm. And you've done so much more work to get to that stage. So yeah, I think it's really, I absolutely love it. I love all the intricate marquetry. And what's really cool is since the award, I've kind of gone to some furniture schools and I'm doing talks and workshops on marquetry, which I absolutely love. I didn't know that I would love teaching, but I do love teaching.
That's great.
Yeah, I love the experience of sharing my passion and teaching people marquetry. And so many people are like, oh, I've always wondered how it was done. That's how it's done. And obviously the stuff that we do here is so exquisite and pretty much mind-blowing to most people that, you know, when I do a PowerPoint talk or I talk people through the samples, like I'll take samples with me, they can't quite believe, you know, that it's even possible.
No.
So that's really cool.
Yeah, and it's lovely to be able to do the teaching side of it as well, I imagine, to be able to not just show the finished product, but to be able to teach people about the process and the craft that goes behind it, which is also, you know, what I suppose we're trying to do with these awards is to drill into the detail more. And I think in the article last year, we definitely went more into all the different parts of the games board. But I'm quite interested as well to know, you know, what did winning that award, the Emerging Artisan of the Year, actually mean for you? Did it give you confidence, visibility, new opportunities? What did it mean to you?
Well, the initial, you know, being there and my name being called out and going onto the stage, I couldn't quite believe that it was me that I'd achieved that. And I suppose now that you know kind of the story, you know, that what happened with the Royal Marines, there was some very, there was not very nice things said about me when I left. And, you know, when you think someone is going to sort of support you in your career, they wrote just one sentence and they said the above named rank is a drain on the band service's resources and therefore needs to be medically discharged. And so you can imagine after giving your life 12 years to something, to be called a drain was soul destroying. And that's kind of where the Invictus Games helped, because I remember being stood at the end. I'd made the finals for all the swimming events, and this was in Toronto. And I was in the fight. It was the last race of the night. It was the final 100 meters freestyle. And I'd come fourth in every race. The Australians were so good. And I just remember diving in, and I was screaming underwater because I was just thinking, I'm going to show these people that I'm not a drain. You know, I am worthy.
Yeah.
And when I popped up at the other end and managed to get a bronze medal, that was just amazing. And then I suppose, you know, fast forward to Silver Lining and somebody believing in me again. You know, they gave me this chance. They took a punt on me, and to then win an award, it meant, you know, so much more than just, oh, I've got this award. It just affirmed that I wasn't a drain, that there was a reason why, you know, you keep going. And even though there's life throws you a lot of things to sort of get through, it was all worth it, because there I was achieving again. And there were times that I really never thought I would, yeah, I could never have imagined where I was going to be. And I suppose that's why it meant so much, was because it was such a big journey to get there. Yeah, and it just affirmed that, yeah, everything was going to be okay.
You felt valued again.
Yeah, exactly. I was valued again, and people could see my passion in my work. It doesn't matter if it was me singing on the stage in front of 7,000 people or whether it was me working in a studio workshop here with four people. Somebody in, well, more than one person, sorry, like the whole committee had voted for me to win, and they had seen that I had value to offer in my work, and that was wonderful.
Yeah.
And I adore what I do. Don't get me wrong, it's not easy all the time, but things don't go right all the time either. But I just love creating, and I love making people happy.
Mm. Well, I think there's no more worthy winner because of the game itself and knowing all the backstory that goes along with it. Also, no one should ever be called a drain on anyone's resources. And I think that could not be further from the truth. I think you've had a very lovely full circle moment where it's actually the antithesis to being a drain. You give a lot to other people, and you've certainly given a lot of joy to myself and everyone in the super yacht industry just through this one games board. So I'd say it's an incredible achievement and very, very well deserved. So it was a lovely story to write as well.
Yeah, thanks very much. That's lovely.
And what about, so we're 1 year on now from winning the award. What are you working on at the minute? Can you give us any details about that?
Well, I mean, obviously, as you know, a lot of our stuff is kind of hush-hush.
All confidential.
Yeah, which makes it more exciting, doesn't it? But yeah, I've currently been working, that we've got this big project going on, and one of the pieces that I've just finished working on is sort of a 3 meter long table. Yeah, it's a big dining table that extends. And there was also a matching coffee table that I solely worked on both of those.
Wow.
I say solely, obviously we're all a team, but that was kind of like my main project.
These are your big projects, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that was really interesting because that was using Macassar veneer and mother of pearl.
Wow.
And pearlized sheets, and I think it was over 4,000 pieces that I had to input, and I had to make a 92 leaf starburst to start with, which was just insane.
It was just the warm up, actually.
yeah, the coffee table was 92 leaves. So I made that, and then I had to put that back on the laser and cut into it. And, you know, Macassar is quite a sought after veneer. So that was a bit hairy, but all went well. It's looking amazing. It's still in the workshop currently. Yeah. The client's got some amazing pieces. So it's been really great to work on that. A real challenge.
Well, I look forward to seeing the images, hopefully at some point. And, yeah, you know, sure, it could be another winner in next year's awards.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Maybe I can present the award.
Yeah, well, we'd love to have you there, so who better?
Well, I loved that trip. It was such a great trip. It's so interesting as well. Because obviously we, as makers, we don't get to meet anyone. You kind of don't even realise the breadth of the world that you're in. So, you know, going there to Kitzbühel and meeting everybody and sitting in on those talks, it was really eye-opening. Really
it's inspiring, isn't it? It's a great, I mean, obviously I'm biased, but I do think that the Super Yacht Design Awards, Super Yacht Design Festival rather, is just so important for the industry because it does bring together people from all different aspects of design, not even just the yachting industry, you know, it's to bring in so many different voices and perspectives. And I think quite often in the yachting industry, we become so insular and we don't get those outside perspectives in. And yeah, it's great because I think it does just really inspire everyone and just push the boundaries of design further and further.
Am I right in thinking that the award that I won is quite a new award?
I think it was the second year that it was running when you received it. Yeah, it will long continue now. So
just going on what you were saying, like, I think that's what's so important about awards like this is that it kind of, it opens the eyes of, you know, the people in the yacht world of what these makers are doing. But also as a maker, you kind of sometimes feel a bit forgotten. So it was just so nice to have that.
The recognition.
Yeah, the recognition, exactly. It was so nice to get the recognition and to meet people and, you know, they've got a face to who made that, you know, table.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
I think it was so important because we have so many awards in the industry about, and which are also very important, may I add, but, you know, about the finished yacht and the finished product and about the exterior and the interior design. And I know that it's now getting harder and harder with all the NDAs and, you know, privacy to try and show some of these great artworks. But I think, you know, if we can drill into the detail a bit more and show the tables and the games boards and, you know, all these parts of the yacht, that's a great way of people just being able to appreciate, you know, all the different makers that go into all these projects. So,
and I think people really love to see the workings, like the background photos of, you know, how did it get to that, and obviously it's great for Silver Lining itself, and it's testament to the fact that they did take a chance with me and it paid off. And hopefully if anybody does, you know, listen and they think, oh, I really want to do this, or I want to change career, it just goes to show that you can do it, and hopefully someone takes a chance. And also the people that are thinking of taking the chance, it is worth it sometimes, because Silver Lining, they had no idea if I would be able to do marquetry at all, but they trained me up, they put a lot of time into it, and they have, they've always made me feel very valued.
Well, that's great, and that's exactly the kind of story and stories that we need to highlight, because it is inspiring. And I hope that it will, you know, awards like this will continue and encourage studios to take a chance on people and, you know, keep the skill and the craft going for many years to come.
Yeah.
So my final question, it's a small question, but I think it's quite a difficult one to answer, is just what still excites you most about craft?
Say that's a small question. I feel like that's an everything question, isn't that?
It is.
That's what we search and yearn for every day, is that excitement. And I think for me, I'm surrounded by people that, don't get me wrong, we all have days where we just think, oh, it's work, you know, work's tough. But there are also other days, you know, when I stand talking to my colleagues that work in leather, or you know, my fellow colleagues in marquetry and they're doing some crazy resin work, or we're talking about how we want to make it, even like making things in your own time. Even though we do this all day, every day, I still want to try and make things in my own time, and I want to try different things. And I just think that's what keeps it exciting, is that everyone around me essentially loves being creative.
Mm.
So you just kind of feed off each other. And I've built a little ceramics, well, my husband built me a little ceramic studio in the garden. So I've got a lovely little space to go and be creative at home as well. So I also get to do my own little bits and bobs, you know, whenever I have time. And I'm always searching for new and exciting projects. But I think that it's surrounding yourself with the right people that's essential.
Absolutely. And I think there's just endless possibilities there within your craft and how you'll keep, I'm sure this is not the end of the story. I can feel that this is just, it's going to keep going, and there'll be many.
I hope so.
You're a multifaceted person in terms of all your different skills. And I think it's all coming together. I can feel it all building together. So.
Yeah, I do hope so. I mean, I adore board games and you know, games boards like chess and backgammon. So I would love to do more of those. Also, I just think, you know, working with more native veneers and natural colours and using that to create the patterns and the colour schemes that people want, but trying to use more natural products. And I do feel like there's more of a push to that now, but that's quite exciting as well, because there are some absolutely stunning wood veneers out there.
More bits to be explored.
Yeah, I hope there's lots to come. Who knows? But then, you know, I wouldn't have believed that any of that I've just told you would have happened, you know, back in 2016 when it all went a bit wrong. So what was that? 10, wow, 10 years ago. That's crazy.
It's staying open to it all though, isn't it? And just feeling like you're being redirected to different parts of your life and different skills, which is great.
Yeah, and it's sort of saying yes to opportunities and not being scared. Although it is scary, but that's what makes it exciting, because if it wasn't hard, you wouldn't do it, you know? I just think you need that push. Yeah, it wasn't easy just to move back to Australia on my own, but I did it and I'm so glad I did. And it wasn't easy moving up here and leaving my family, but I did it.
No.
And even though it's still hard, amazing things have come of it. I've got an amazing group of friends, and I've obviously now married, and I've got a lovely home. And it's just things open up. If you stay open, and this is going to sound a bit woo-woo, but if you stay open to the universe, I do believe that
it will reward you.
It will. Yeah. If you're an open and honest and kind person, then I don't see why it wouldn't. It's not always going to be easy, is it? But
no,
it's definitely going to be worth it.
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely the living embodiment of that. So I'm sure all of our listeners will be very inspired after this, because I certainly am.
Oh, well, I hope so. And even if it just makes somebody think, oh, do you know what? I'm going to buy a pad of paper and some pencils and go outside and sketch
that
flower.
Just get creative. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just get creative. Because the world is pretty dark at the moment, isn't it? So
it is, yeah.
I feel like you can just lose yourself in, is it the left side of the brain? Or I think it's the left side of the brain. Anyway, one side of the brain, you lose yourself into the flow state when you're creating. And that is, that's what it's all about.
Definitely. Keeping that creativity. Well, Poppy, thank you so much. That's been such a lovely conversation. And I'm so glad to hear that things just keep getting better as the years go on.
Yeah.
Long may that continue.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for your time, and hope to chat again perhaps in another year.
Well, yeah, who knows? Who knows what will happen in a year?
Who knows?
Thanks very much, Holly.
Thanks,
that was such
Poppy.
A lovely chat.
My thanks to Jay Rushton and Poppy Pawsey for joining me. The Boat Artistry and Craft Awards continue to celebrate the extraordinary talent, dedication and ingenuity that exists behind the scenes of the superyacht industry, recognising not only the finished pieces we admire on board, but also the people and stories behind their creation. You can read more about this year's winners, as well as finding more information on entering the 2027 awards in the link below. This episode was a production of Boat International Media, sponsored by Amico & Co. If you've enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to Boat Briefing wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating or review below. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.